Technorama episode 621, number nine. Hey, welcome to Technorama. This is the show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. If this is your first time listening to Technorama, watching Technorama, whatever you do with this, maybe dragging it behind the car after a wedding like tin cans. Thank you. Thank you for dragging us behind your car with like tin cans. If you are returning, well, throw rice, I guess. We don't throw rice anymore because it's bad for the birds. What do they do now?
Birdseed.
Birdseed, that's right. Throw birdseed at us.
It's been a while since you've been in a wedding.
I guess so.
Yeah.
That's what happens at least when a year. You get old. The kids these days, they're so non-traditional. They just run off to the justice of the peace and get the business over with. And then they come back later and have a reception. So I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm just happy they're happy. As you were saying just before the recording started, it's better to be. There goes the Ethernet port. Okay. It's down. It's up. Okay. I'm going to call them tomorrow. We got the Mac Mini back, but apparently the new motherboard is having some issues, and that is now impacting my ability to scroll in the notes. That's lovely. So I think I know what to do at this point, aside from the message says, trying to connect. This is nice. Okay. So if some sound effects don't go off, I'll just sing them to you.
Okay. Ding.
I'm Chuck Tomasi. Across from me is Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig?
I'm doing well. Trying to stay warm here. The temperature's been up and down, up and down.
Oh, yeah? What's the range you're seeing?
Well, let's see. It was
Fahrenheit.
As low as, it's supposed to be like 25, and then maybe get up in the 50s or 60s during the day.
So you're getting below freezing.
A little bit. Okay. Well, the other day I went on my run with Dad, and it was like 28. Yeah.
Okay, we're getting up. It's about 45. Donna and I went for a walk this morning, saw some hot air balloons flying around out there. Oh. And I think our high today was about 70. So still pretty nice during the day. It feels really good to get in the sun every time. Mm-hmm. So it is December after all.
When it's 28 out, the sun doesn't do much.
You got to sit there wearing black clothing and hold your arms out like a lemur.
Dad and I were on a run, and I said, oh, great, here comes the sun. I said, oh, it's too cold. It's not doing anything.
The sun froze.
It broke. Yeah, the sun broke.
Okay, let's get on with our feedback. We have our question of the week, at least.
Letters. Oh, we get letters. Letters, we get letters. Letters.
We asked you a question last week that said, what's one cool thing you recently learned? And we got lots of responses on Facebook this weekend. Kelly Cole Scott writes, you can get car rental discounts through Amazon Prime. I did not know that. So now go look.
Amazon discounts through what? Say it.
You can get car rental discounts through Amazon Prime.
Oh, car rental.
I haven't rented a car in a very long time. I've been Ubering it on a lot of the business trips, but
it's been a year since you've done any
pretty
any
much
car rental.
Pretty much. Well, we had the cruise last year in March. Mary says Danny Elfman was the lead singer of Oingo Boingo, and the first movie he scored was Pee-wee's Big Adventure because Paul Rubens was a fan. I learned that there is a Netflix special called The Christmas Movies That Made Us.
Yes, I haven't seen that one yet.
Okay. Now, I'm a little disappointed in this because there's only two movies in there. Like, that's not a big selection unless they plan on adding more later. When I looked, it was Elf and The Nightmare Before Christmas. And I said, well, I'm going to skip over the Elf one and go right for Nightmare Before Christmas. Good history in there. Lots of great stories of how the movie came to be. And
that's a favorite film of mine.
It's a cult classic because it did not do well in the theaters, but I'll leave that for you to watch, dear viewer/listener.
Speaking of sort of Christmas movie, there's the other series also called The Movies That Made Us. And I think they have four on there, and one of them is Home Alone, which is also, you know, set at Christmas time.
Well, I'm wondering if that was. I looked at this list and I went, where's The Grinch? Where's The Peanuts? Where's, you know, where's Charlie Christmas Brown's story. Christmas Story? Where's, you know, these, who are they catering to with a movie from the late 80s right. and Elf? Like, really? Yeah. Really?
Well, what I was going to say was I would suggest go check out The Movies That Made Us. The one about Home Alone.
Yeah.
Was pretty interesting. There's a lot of cool little things that I was like, oh, I didn't know that. So,
all right, I will look. I, you know, I watched Home Alone a couple of times, but it wasn't, you know, it's not one of my go-to movies.
I like it every once in a while. But yeah, no, it had some interesting production notes that, I mean, I can go into it, but we're doing our feedback here. So, okay. But anyway, there were some interesting things that happened behind the scenes, and it's a kind of surprising the movie got made. Let's put it that way.
Rebecca Soldwich says, the singer that sang You're a Mean One, Mr. Grinch, and Tony the Tiger are the same. Yes, that is true.
Oh, I didn't realize
you
that.
You did not know that. I'm trying to remember his name. I can't remember. It's on the tip of my tongue. Maybe some of the other feedback will come in here. Plum and figgy puddings do not require plums or figs, just some sort of dried fruit. Interesting.
Okay.
My husband saw Robert Kennedy at the Ambassador Hotel in Los Angeles for, tragically, his last speech he made. And Tiffany writes, how to upcycle the many toddler hair bow headbands into bow clips that she will wear for years to come. You have some the Technorama page that we got?
Yeah. So Steve Pritchard says the original voice actor. Oh, that's the one you just said about Tony the Tiger. Thurl Ravenscroft.
That's what it
Ravenscroft.
Is. I wanted to say Raven something.
Sounds like a name out of Harry Potter.
Raven.
Weber Baker says a friend just got a Tesla and showed me all the bells and whistles. I'm sure there are some bells and whistles I haven't seen. I haven't even taken a ride in a Tesla yet.
Really? I've got a couple of Uber rides in them. They're very nice. The S3, it looks like there's no dashboard and somebody just put a big old iPad Pro on the in the middle console.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think it looks fantastic, but yeah, I'm waiting on somebody to give me a ride. I don't know. Anyway. So John Miller Jr. said, and this is something that also I didn't realize, till the other day, that bodybuilder actor David Prowse wore the Darth Vader costume in the first three Star Wars movies, of course.
Yeah.
He trained actor Christopher Reeve to bulk up for the Superman movies.
Huh.
So Reeve didn't have to wear a padded suit. So how about, oh, wait a minute. Bonus, Mark Hamill and Christopher Reeve share the same birthday. I did know that. but a year apart. They were born on September 25th. Hamill was born in 51. Reeve was in 52. Interesting parallel since the first Star Wars movie came out a year before the Superman movie, Star Wars in 97, and the Superman movie was in 78.
I remember both of those vividly.
Yes, I love Superman the movie. I think it's great.
You will believe a man can fly.
Yeah.
We had some parody about that in school. We were doing some audiovisual stuff, and one of our assignments was to make a promo like that, and I don't remember, but I think my buddy Bob Larson had something to do with a parody of that. I wish I could remember more details, but I remember laughing hysterically that
well, we made our own.
You will believe a man. You will believe a man can something or other, but it was not fly. It was
sing. He can sing on Saturday nights on karaoke.
You will believe a man can live stream.
That's right.
All right, is that it?
I think that is it.
We are done with that. We'll ask you another question at the end of the show, so stick around. Let's go right into the history. I love it when my buttons are back and they're in the right order.
There we go. They're playing, too.
Yeah, they are for now. We'll see what happens. On this day in history, let's get going with this. There's only so much time, and there's a lot of things to say this time. 344th day of the year in the Gregorian calendar, there are 22 days remaining in 2020. It was on this date in 1793 that New York City's first daily newspaper, the American Minerva, rolls right off the tongue. It was established by none other than Noah Webster, the dictionary man.
Oh, okay, yeah. It was also on this date in 1868 that the first traffic lights were installed outside the Palace of Westminster in London. Resembling railway signals, they used semaphore arms and were illuminated at night by red and green gas lamps.
You know what semaphore arms are, right? They come on, ding!
Yeah, the old Volkswagen Beetles had the blinkers that did that. It would pop up. I'm serious.
That same date in 1950, Harry Gold is sentenced to 30 years in jail for helping Klaus Fuchs pass information about the Manhattan Project to the Soviet Union. His testimony is later instrumental in the prosecution of Julius and Ethel Rosenberg.
In December 9th, 1953, General Electric announced that all communist employees will be discharged from the company.
Ah, you gotta love the Red Scare days. No, you don't. Thank you, Joseph McCarthy.
That was, you know, just somebody throwing an accusation your way.
Oh, I know. And your career is doomed. Mm-hmm. 58 years ago today, the Petrified Forest National Park was established right here in Arizona.
Have you been there?
Not yet.
Okay. Well, put it on your list.
Okay.
Also today in 1965, a Charlie Brown Christmas, first in a series of Peanut television specials, debuted on CBS.
Hey, we were just talking about that. Also on this date in 1968 that Douglas Engelbart gave what became known as the mother of all demos.
I know. I love that. I love that title.
Publicly debuting the computer mouse, hypertext, and the bitmapped graphical user interface using the online system known as NLS.
Okay. Also today in 1979, the eradication of smallpox virus was certified, making smallpox the first of only two diseases to ever have been driven to extinction, Rinderpest in 2011 being the other. Wow, that's a big gap.
Yeah, it's hard to eradicate these things.
Mm-hmm.
Think how long it'll take us to get rid of COVID-19. Happy birthday goes out of the state to Dutch mathematician and cartographer Jama Frisius, born on this date in 1508.
All right, and Dutch mathematician and astronomer, not to be outdone by the other one.
I think I said astronomer. This guy's a cartographer.
Okay.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, no, you said, I think, astronomer. Metius was born 449 years ago today.
Polish-German chemist and academic Nobel Prize laureate Fritz Haber, born on this date in 1868.
And Nikolai Luzin was the Russian mathematician, theorist, and academic. Was born on the same date in 1883.
German-American fitness expert, the guy who developed Pilates, Joseph Pilates.
Joseph Pilates.
He was born on this date in 1883.
And Clarence Birdseye, the American businessman, founded Birdseye. Imagine that. Was born 134 years ago today.
Well, his last name is one word, but the company name is two words, Bird's Eye. Yeah. And I can see how it would get confusing. American admiral and computer scientist designed COBOL. Grace Hopper was born on this date in 1906.
Yeah. I was going to say, never mind.
Move on.
Yeah, Grace Hopper is awesome. Anyway, American physicist and academic Nobel Prize laureate James Rainwater was born 103 years ago today.
American chemist and academic Nobel Prize laureate, another Nobel Prize laureate. Well, what other podcast celebrates Nobel Prize laureates like we do?
That's right.
William Lipscomb was born on this date in 1919.
And American actor Red Fox was born 98 years ago today.
Say it. You know you want to say it.
Elizabeth. Oh, he's a biggin'. 98. Oh, it's a big one.
2 years, Elizabeth. I'm coming for you. Born December 9th, 1928. American actor Dick Van Patten. Vespa. Here. We'll do it this way. Vespa. Oh, I didn't have the right mic selected.
All right.
Vespa. Yeah. There we go.
English actress Judi Dench is 86 today.
The Dom Judi Dench?
Yes, that's correct.
American actor and voice artist Michael Dorn was born on this date in 1952.
And also on the same date in 1953, American actor and producer John Malkovich.
Let's see. We got listener birthdays in here. Let's see if we get through these real quick. December 9th, Steve Kite, a.k.a. Big Unit 62. The 12th has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 birthdays. Decker D, Kevin Burns, Matt Blocker, Rob Reel, and Pamela Gay from Astronomy Cast. And on the 14th is Michael Spence from Brother Osric's Scriptorium. That's the way it was on this day in history for December 9, 2020. And if you want to get on the birthday calendar list, go over to chuckchat.com/birthday or /wiki. It's up to you. We are an equal opportunity celebratory podcast. I ran out of words.
Yeah.
Sorry. But I didn't run out of music.
Go on the budget on the words there.
All right. That worked out, sort of.
Yeah. Sort of.
I'm just trying to keep scrolling while I can. The land connection keeps going up and down on that Mac Mini. I think there is a call due tomorrow for a new motherboard that's kind of flaky.
Why don't you just dial in with the wireless on that thing?
Because I can't. Oh, that's going to be a bit of a problem tomorrow. I'm going to have to. There's more latency on. I'm not doing any screen sharing, but. It's working all right for now, but tomorrow morning I think I'm going to have to and live with the latency.
Or a USB Ethernet adapter. That'll get you by. Do you have one?
If I had one, I'd have to look. I have a USB C Ethernet, but let's move on. We're not here to do tech support live.
Yeah. Sir, can you click on my computer?
Okay, let's get going with the first one.
And good news, crybabies.
Good Lord, crybabies.
Yeah, that was the Ethernet going up and down. There we go.
Yeah, and amplified. Ugh, okay.
Thank you, Auphonic, for leveling that for us later. You may have to read this one because I apparently can't open up the article right now.
Okay. So AI solves a 50-year-old science problem in a stunning advance that could dramatically change how we fight diseases, researchers say. So a 50-year-old science problem has been solved that could allow for dramatic changes in the fight against diseases. For years, scientists have been struggling with the problem of protein folding. When I was thinking of protein folding when I was reading this, I kept thinking of you talking about having that long phone cord that would have that little twist in the middle.
that's single strand DNA.
That was a form of folding. Anyway, so protein folding, mapping the three-dimensional shapes of the protein that are responsible for diseases from cancer to COVID-19. Google's DeepMind claims to have created an artificially intelligent program called AlphaFold that is able to solve those problems in a matter of days. If it works, the solution could come decades before it was expected, according to experts, and could have transformative effects in the way the diseases are treated.
Hmm.
There are 200 million known proteins at present, and only a fraction have actually been unfolded to fully understand what they do and how they work. Even those have been successfully understood often rely on extensive and time-intensive techniques, with scientists spending years unfolding each structure and relying on the equipment that can cost many millions of dollars.
Hmm.
So DeepMind worked on the AI project. So DeepMind, so it's like one artificial intelligence building another.
Okay.
Hmm. I'm taking a guess there. DeepMind worked on the AI project with the 14th community-wide experiment on the critical assessment of techniques for protein structure prediction. A group of scientists have been looking into the matter since 1994.
Wow, that's a long project. Yeah,
there's more detail here. I won't go into all that.
Okay.
It's pretty cool. You know, when I think about them unfolding it, I'm thinking like they take a little piece of tweezers and tweak it.
No. Not quite like that.
No, well, that's not what they're doing. Oh, okay.
Speaking of long-term projects, it was the Middle Ages since the last time humans witnessed the brilliant astronomical phenomenon we are about to see. The planets Jupiter and Saturn align in the sky every 20 years or so, but it's been nearly 800 years since they've been close enough together from Earth's vantage point to create a double planet, in air quotes, star known as the Christmas Star or Star of Bethlehem. This alignment will appear as a bright point of light that stands out starkly in the night sky. Now, if you've been watching Jupiter and Venus, or Jupiter and Saturn, you'll notice that they've been pretty much the same distance for the last couple of months. They got really close in the last week or so, and they're going to continue to get closer. You'd have to go all the way back to, March 4th in the year 1226 to see a closer alignment between these two objects visible in the night sky. Now, they have been close before with the triple conjunction where we pass them and one appears to move forwards and backwards. That's kind of fun. The timing of the Christmas star being visible just before Christmas will likely prompt comparisons to the nativity story in the Gospel of Matthew, in which the three wise men followed a bright star, leading them to baby Jesus. Biblical scholars have debated for centuries whether the star was a symbol in the fable or an actual astronomical event such as the one we will see this month. One theory, which famous German astronomer Johannes Kepler proposed, was that the original Star of Bethlehem referred to in the Bible could have been an even rarer triple alignment of Jupiter, Saturn, and Venus. Ooh. Mm-hmm. Okay, regardless, we are in for our own astronomical treat the week of Christmas. The peak alignment will occur on December 21st, coinciding with the winter solstice. For the best viewing, those in the northern hemisphere can look to the southwestern sky about 45 minutes after sunset that day. However, we should be able to see it throughout the week. In a year with so much darkness, I did a little research on this, and I said, how close are they? Because I hear people saying, oh, it's going to look like one star. Not really. Okay. The moon and the sun are about 1 degree apart. So think of that. If you hold your finger at arm's length, you can cover up the moon. Okay. That's about a degree. They are going to be 1/5 of that distance. So I think with the naked eye, you're still going to be able to say, though, there's two dots up there if you've got fairly decent eyesight.
You know, even at Thanksgiving, when I was outside and I remember seeing what I wouldn't say it was bright like this star, but I thought it was super bright. I was like, what is that? And I held up my phone, did the sky map app. Yeah. And there it was. I was like, you could see Saturn and Jupiter and even Pluto was right there.
Saturn and Jupiter are not in the morning. They're in the evening.
What? I didn't say it was the morning.
Oh, because you sent me a picture in the morning and that was clearly Venus.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, that was Venus. Okay. No, but one evening I was outside and I saw it for a couple times and it looked like one star just,
what?
You know, kind of bright.
No.
This is supposed to be.
No, there's clearly a segment between the two.
Not much.
Yeah, there is. Yeah, there is.
Okay.
You could probably put two fingers up there right now, but they'll get closer. I'm looking forward to this. I knew they were headed that way because I've been following for the last couple of years when Saturn was like in the claws of Scorpio, and it's been gradually moving across the sky. And I went, all right, hey, wait, there's Jupiter. They're kind of getting closer. So that's been fun. So
yeah, I put it on my calendar to remind myself to go out and check.
Go look after sunset. Like you said, you'd be able to see them all week. So looking forward to that. What's our next story, Monfrere?
Our next story. Maybe I should open the link. That'd be good, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that kind of helps when you're reading a news story.
Yeah. So this is interesting. Scientists reverse the aging clock, restore age-related vision loss through epigenetic reprogramming.
They do what? Epigenetic. I've never heard that word before.
I haven't either. So you see, I listened to our last show today in the car, and we picked up on a lot of new words here lately. So Harvard Medical School scientists have successfully restored vision in mice. I don't know how they give the mice tests to find this out, but
better one, better two.
Yeah. I don't know. Do it again. Two, three. Anyway, so, Harvard Medical School has successfully restored vision in mice by turning back the clock on age-related eye cells in the retina to recapture youthful gene function. The team's work, described today on December 2nd, 2020 in Nature, represents the first demonstration that it may be possible to safely reprogram complex tissues such as the nerve cells in the eye to an earlier age. In addition to resetting the cell's aging clock, the researcher successfully reversed vision loss in animals with a condition mimicking the human glaucoma, a leading cause of blindness around the world. So the treatment represents the first successful attempt to reverse glaucoma-induced vision loss rather than merely stem its progression, the team said. If replicated through further studies, the approach could pave the way for therapies to promote tissue repair across various organs and reverse aging and age-related diseases in humans. So there's a lot of detail.
This is a long article. Yeah.
Yeah. But I thought that was really cool. You know, being able to reprogram some of those tissues to an earlier age. And, you know, it kind of goes into, it's a long time ago, I read this article. It was talking about being immortal, you know, where how you would go through life. And if you didn't have an end date, so to speak.
Yeah.
Anyway, you could kind of see where you could start reprogramming your organs to just live longer, you know, from this kind of research.
I hope they come out with it before I die.
You know, at least the week before.
Soon, because my organs aren't getting any younger. All right, we do have another from spacenews.com. NASA has made awards to four companies worth exactly $25,000 and $1. $25,000 and $1 to obtain.
What's the $1 for?
I don't know. Shipping?
Yeah, shipping and handling.
To obtain lunar samples, part of an effort by the agency to establish a precedent for ownership and use of space resources. NASA announced December 3rd that it issued awards to iSpace Europe, iSpace Japan, Lunar Outpost, and Masten Space System for the collection of small amounts of lunar samples. The company will be responsible for flying missions to the moon and demonstrating that they have collected the material through images and other data. NASA will then take ownership of the materials. The agency announced the initiative in September, emphasizing that the awards are less about the samples themselves than about being able to extract and use lunar resources. Quote, "What we're trying to do is make sure that there's a norm of behavior that says that resources can be extracted and that we're doing it in a way that is in compliance with the Outer Space Treaty," unquote, NASA Administrator Jim Bridenstine said on September 10th. NASA officials reiterated the point that point in a call with reporters about the rewards. "We want to demonstrate explicitly that you can extract and you can utilize resources and that we will be conducting those activities in full compliance with the Outer Space Treaty," said Mike Gold. Sounds like they're kind of repeating each other. NASA received 22 proposals. Phil McAllister, director commercial space flight at NASA headquarters, said the agency used the lowest price technically acceptable approach, that's their approach, lowest price technically acceptable, to evaluate the proposals, first determining whether or not the proposal was feasible and it met the agency's requirements. He said 14 of the 22 proposals were rejected after the rejected either for technical issues or costs that went over the agency's limit. Okay, then they went on with some other stuff.
I was thinking it was probably some kind of a harebrained scheme that you and I would come up with.
Yeah. Rolling a D20?
Yeah, we're going to have some springs that kind of launch the, we're going to send a unit up there with a trowel to get the samples.
Sure. That works for me. Or blast it off with a laser. We're not sure. Yeah. Let's give a quick shout out to the chat room, shall we? I'm not on Facebook.
Oh, by the way, yes. John Miller Jr. says you should just pickle your organs.
Working on that. Liver going first.
Yeah, liver's first. Mike Robison, he's in there. Craig Glasner's hopped in. Right. John Miller Jr. And that's about it.
Okay, small but intimate group today.
Feisty people.
We're being responsible, wearing our masks and social distancing. Well,
oh, Mark Trouble. There you go. Mark Trouble just popped in. Just in time.
Podcast has always experienced social distancing.
not by choice.
No. When we have live events, there's nobody there. It just works out in our favor now.
Yeah, no, that's Clinton. He can he'll back us up on that.
Let's do a little bit of Remember When, shall we? Let's bring up the... If the Ethernet is working, it is. Oh, good. A baby born from a 27-year-old frozen embryo breaks a record. Would the kid be 27 now?
I tell you, I had to take a moment to wrap my head around whether we're going with this. Go for it. You want to go
Molly
for it?
Molly Everett Gibson may only be less than 1 month old, but she's already made history. Weighing 6 pounds, 13 ounces, Molly, who was born on October 26th to parents Tina and Ben Gibson, spent more than 27 years frozen as an embryo before being transferred to her mother's uterus on February 10th. Wow. Good time to wake up and be born. Welcome to COVID.
Yeah. Your 27 years are up here.
She would have been as old as my daughter, Julie, if she had started when she was first. Anyway, the time the embryo spent in frozen preservation set a new known record for the longest frozen embryo to ever come to birth. According to a research staff in the University of Tennessee Preston Medical Library, the previous record was set by none other than her sister, Emma Wren Gibson, who was born in 2017. Emma had been frozen for more than 24 years. Did they got any more? I mean, mom's going to be a little old pretty soon.
Yeah.
And both she and her sister were frozen together as embryos, making them full genetic siblings. Very cool. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
When Tina and Ben returned from their sibling transfer, I was thrilled that the remaining two embryos from the donor that resulted in Emma Wren's birth survived the thaw and developed into two very good quality embryos for the transfer, said National Embryo Donation Center lab director and embryologist Carolyn Sommerfeld, who thawed Molly's embryo. This definitely reflects on the technology used all those years ago and the ability to preserve the embryos for future use under an indefinite time frame. That's pretty awesome. Cute kid.
I wonder what the oldest frozen embryo is.
Okay, so you think there's still some out there that are frozen that haven't been. So this is what she set the record for? To be born, well, right?
Yeah. Oh, because baby the oldest frozen embryo to have been born, you know, so yes, she was technically 27 years old.
So they're genetic siblings. The mom looks like the parents, whoever they were.
Yeah. Had two embryos frozen.
Right. So the woman who gave birth to these kids is not the biological mother, is what I picked up on. Because I look at these pictures and she looks like she's barely 27.
Right.
Okay.
That's what they were saying. Actually, she's not. The mother's not much older than the baby. That's the other thing. Yeah, I don't see it.
Well, that would be weird if your kid was conceived before you were born.
Yeah, I know, right?
All right,
it can happen.
All right,
now I was curious of why somebody would freeze the embryos. I don't know under what conditions you would freeze an embryo, and how many there are actually out there. I'm curious about that.
Probably whole farms of them, banks of them,
in the Matrix. They're just sitting there waiting
in their pods. All right, let's do the patron thing, because these people deserve a huge thank you this week. This show is brought to you by you, our wonderful patrons. Your donations help keep this show going, and we had to flex that muscle extensively this week because our Mac Mini was out for repair, needed a new main logic board, or MLB as they like to call it in the repair shops, which sounded like baseball to me, but we'll move on from that because this isn't a baseball podcast. And we had sufficient funds in the kitty for that repair. So thank you very much. It's back. Still a little questionable on the Ethernet. We're going to work on that. But if it weren't for you, we would be in a different path right now. And the thanks really go to Alexis Duran, Amber Elstad, Amy Bowen, Avner Braverman, Ben Vaughn, Brian Brown, Chris MC, Dandy Man Coyer. Thank you to Danny Mortensen, Dean Jensen, Denise Inglis, Gary Lindros, Harold McKinstry, John Clifford, John Noble, Jorga Schrauen, Christina, Kyle Nishioka. Thank you, Leon. Thank you, Mark Kilfoyle, Mike Wills, Saturday Morning Media, Stephen Weshey, Steve Therian, Spiffy, Steve Cody, and Sweet Steve London. Thank you very much. If you want to help support this podcast, please go over to patreon.com/technorambapodcast. You will get our undying love, as these people have. You will keep the podcast going. You'll keep our equipment running. The hosting fees, all that stuff is very important to us. And the fact that it's not coming out of our wallet is even more appreciated, because my wife would have ditched this hobby years ago.
Hey, by the way, I thought you kept calling for a little while. I thought when you said Sweet Steve London,
yes,
I thought you were saying Swede Steve.
Well, he's a Swede also.
Yes,
Sweet Steve. Wow, there's an alliteration for you.
Yeah, Sweet Steve.
No, that's his Twitter handle, Sweet Steve, but it's spelled STEWE, so you can just rearrange the letters. He's got an anagram of his own, which I think is really cool. All right. We do have a message in the mailbox from Stephen Weshey. I do need to reply to that. I haven't finished reading it, though. So we will get to that. Again, patreon.com. Let me put that on the screen for those of you that are watching. patreon.com/technoramapodcast. Really, really thank you. Thank you. It was very relieving to be able to pull out the Technorama credit card, do the tap to pay, and it was taken care of. I went, oh. Thank goodness, because that one really kind of would have hurt.
Hey, wait a minute. We got a Technorama credit card?
We do.
Oh.
I'm not giving you the number.
That was my next question. What's the digits on that? I didn't get one.
Yeah. Let me know.
Yeah.
Okay, we do have one thing in here for Pass Me the Remote. What were we using for the music on that? Here it is. That's what it was. Bum, 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 bum. And now the news.
Yeah.
I'm Jack Ethernay. Pass me the remote. Thanks. Oh. Got it right here.
Oh, wait.
I took it right off your desk.
Yeah.
I'm just going to close up with the fourth season of Man in the High Castle, because I think a week or so ago I said, hey, I'm done. And then I called my buddy Scott and he said, no, you're not done. There's a fourth season. I thought there were only three and four was coming, because he said, this is all a setup for the fourth season, thinking, oh, well, then we'll wait. And then he said, no, it's already out. He finished the fourth season because he said, how far are you? And I told him, he said, you haven't got to the fourth season yet. What? So went back and watched that all this week. There were 10 episodes. If you're not familiar, The Man in the High Castle is based on a Philip K. Dick book. There are four seasons. It's on Amazon Prime. And they've obviously taken the story quite a bit further than Philip K. Dick did. It's based on that story. So like many other things, I think he did Blade Runner also, if I'm not mistaken. So based on, if you read the book, you're going to go, this isn't anything like the show. So I enjoyed all three seasons. And then I'm going to say season four, put the hammer down. Oh, my gosh. I was blown away at the end of episode nine. It was like jaw on the floor. Didn't see that coming a mile away moment. And then episode 10, the finale, kind of leaves you wondering, are they going to have a season five because of these changes in the last episode? No spoilers here, but I really, really enjoyed it. That was It's a bit uncomfortable in spots watching because the premise of the story is, what if the Allies lost World War II? So we've got the Japanese and we've got the Germans, and the Japanese have the West Coast states, and the Germans have pretty much everything up to the Mississippi River. And then there's a neutral zone where all the rebels live, and the Japanese Empire is starting to crumble. So they may have to pull their people out of the West Coast states. There's an oil embargo going on because the Germans control all the oil and the Japanese aren't getting any. So it's really interesting politically. But you feel kind of uncomfortable watching these people, you know, wearing Nazi uniforms, and they have a Christmas party, and there's a swastika on top of the Christmas tree or the Tannenbaum.
Oh my God!
I'm going. Yeah, it really gets kind of awkward. And then you see, you know, older Hitler, and you see older Himmler. You're going, someone please shoot these guys.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
but I'm not going to ruin any give you any spoilers. But I was told by my buddy Scott that many of the actors discarded their uniforms because they weren't comfortable, you know, being associated with them anymore. I don't want to wear that anymore. So there's this alternate world, this parallel universe that some people can cross over into, and they've been bringing back artifacts, most notably films of the Allies winning the war from our world. Yeah. It takes place in the early 1960s, so there's been a number of years that have gone by since the war. But you know, obviously there are different advancements of who's got the bomb, what the technological capabilities are, and by watching this film, people change their viewpoint of, hey, if they defeated the Axis powers, then maybe we can defeat them as well. So it was, it all revolves around this central character, Juliana Crane. So, and the people she's, associated with, and the impact they have both with her, for her. And, again, not going to spoil it. Some really wonderful storytelling in here. Bit of a dark story, as you can imagine. Because most of it takes place in the...
People wearing Nazi uniforms, that sounds like a happy family tromp to me.
It touches on some issues that you can relate to currently as well. So you, as you can imagine, you know, racism and segregation and, you know, but it houses those all in the same, you know, Nazi eugenics experiments and concentration camps and all that kind of stuff too. So, really, really well done. I liked it. I liked it.
I think I watched most of the first season, and for some reason I didn't come back to it. I didn't go back. It wasn't that I didn't like it or anything, but
yeah, there are parts that move a little slowly. You go, oh, come on, move along. What are we doing here? Stick with it. You will enjoy it. As my friend Scott said, it will make you question what is reality, you know, kind of like the Matrix did. Like, wait, are we in a simulation? You know, what's going on here? How would you know? Is there another world where other things happen? How would you know?
Well, this I would only know because I saw the cat twice.
this will make you think similar thoughts.
Okay.
Shall we go on to the geek library? Hey,
Mike Robison says, "Is it springtime for Hitler?"
Oh, they do sing. They do sing a song towards the end of the fourth season that I think most school kids will remember of our era.
And he also says, "A world without Mel Brooks is not worth living in," which I agree.
I'll just give you a hint that it's to the tune of the song over the bridge over the River Kwai. Remember?
Yeah.
Well, there's a song about Hitler that goes with that tune, and if you know it, you know what I'm talking about. If not, you can go look it up. Otherwise, you can watch the show and you'll start laughing. You go, okay, now I get why that song was so popular. Let's go on to the geek.
And by the way, just a quick Google search. Yep. There is no season 5. This was the final season.
That was it. Okay. Yep. Well, then I won't spoil it for anybody. I think season 4 has been out for a while. So on to the geek library. Alrighty. First, you want to take this one? The Stan Lee story?
Yeah, and it's more, we don't have to play any audio or anything.
No.
So it's not family friendly per se, but there's a recording of Stan Lee in a hilarious profane rant. And it's animated as well. This guy was working with Stan Lee. Here, I'll read the little bit of the article. There's not much to it. He says that the late greatly missed Stan Lee was known for his creativity, his kindness, and his incredible moral compass. He is also known for speaking his mind. Lee's former sound engineer, Aaron Fromm, captured the very essence of Lee in a recording that showcases the Marvel legend going off on a hilariously profane rant that had everyone in the studio laughing. So Fromm collaborated with artist Crossberry, to animate the oddly warming glimpse into the man's great mind, calling it the Session with Stan. Or Sessions with Stan.
I don't know that I'd call it a rant so much. It wasn't like he was getting very vocal. I do love the animation. That was very wonderfully done. You feel like you're talking to Uncle Stan on this thing. And he just starts going off on the F word and how he thinks it's one of the most beautiful and flexible words to use. but to say it was a rant is a bit extreme.
Well, when you say rant, I think somebody's angry. He wasn't angry, per se. But yeah, go check that out. As long as you're not offended by words,
go for it. Okay, and what's this last video you threw in? How Mission Control's big display, Mission Control and the Batcave.
I'm trying to remember.
18 glorious minutes of something I didn't watch yet.
I'm trying to remember what this was. Why did I put this in here?
I don't know. Are you going to strike it or leave it as a surprise for the people who click through the show notes?
We've already talked about it. It's a surprise, so go check it out. I'm not going to talk about it.
Geek Library Surprise. There you are. It's a Christmas present to you. We're shipping it now. You should have it in 6 to 8 weeks.
Let's see. This is a video talking about how the displays work in Mission Control in NASA. You know, all the big screens?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's how those work.
Okay. So, yeah, like where you see the ISS going around in its orbit and...
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah. The 6 to 8 week delivery comment that I made kind of reminded me of last week's question of what problem from the 80s and 90s no longer exists. Remember ordering something from mail order and having to wait, allow 6 to 8 weeks for delivery. What takes so long?
Oh, wait a minute. Developing film.
Dropping it off at the Target.
Yeah, I hope I got some good ones.
Yeah, and then you get back your 24 prints and go, well, 21 of them are blurry or cropped funny. You really learn to, it was a bit like programming when you only had like 2K of memory. You got really good at being creative. That's kind of how photography on film was. It wasn't rapid shot on the thing. One of these ought to work.
You had to do a little calculation, whether it's, conscious or subconscious, and to get the picture right.
Although there were fewer moments of missed opportunities. Because, when your cat is doing something or your kid is doing something fun and you got to take out your phone and, press the button twice or hit this hotkey. It's in video mode. No, I want it in photo mode. You're fumbling with these controls and you miss the opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Back then, I'd pick up my 110 or my 35 millimeter and just go click, flip, click, done. The picture was taken. Whether it was a good picture or not remains to be determined, but you could take pictures quickly. I think there's just more, even with my Android phone is press the power button twice and you're in camera mode. It's flipped around to my face. Hit the icon, didn't work. You just missed it. Even 5 seconds going by is an eternity.
You can just double tap the power button again and it would flip over.
Yes, you can. You can. Yeah. And then you realize it's in pro mode or pano. Curses. I was doing a pano last time.
Yeah. There was a set. I was looking for a setting. I don't know if I ever found it, where I wanted it to do default by the main camera. So even if I did a selfie and then later on I go, oh, I double click it, I want it to be the main camera. Cause usually if you're standing with somebody, hey, let's do a selfie.
Yep.
You have a moment. It's not like you're going to, you know, you have a moment to set up the selfie. So I always want it shooting out, you know?
Yeah.
I'll tell you the other, all right, just real quick. The other thing I really like that's changed on a lot of Android cameras, is that when you're taking a picture, just holding down the shutter button, it starts taking video. So if you go, oh, I want a video of this actually, you know, you can just
wait.
You don't have to.
You press and hold the power button? Mm-hmm. No, that says, do you want to shut down now?
No. Open the camera. The shutter button.
Click. Okay. Shutter button. Press and hold. It does rapid fire. Burst mode.
Oh, that one does. I guess maybe it's just the Google, the default Google one. Okay.
Well, I don't need a burst mode of my mixer. That's kind of boring.
Now, tomorrow, somebody says, hey, send me a picture of your broken mixer. Oh, I got a bunch of them.
Oh, rats. I was trying to take a picture of the dashboard so I would remember a song, and all I got is a blurry dashboard shot. Yeah, this is what you used to get with your prints when you got them back from Target.
Right. Beautiful.
Hey, I don't even know what the temperature is set on the air conditioning. It's so bad. Here, yeah. That deserves this one.
That was so terrible. I think you gave me cancer.
Our question of the week. We're going to leave you with this, Calculon. Our question of the week. If somebody says to you, say a movie quote, what is the first one that comes to mind? Wow, Craig, you're really scraping the barrel on this one. This stuff goes by on Facebook every day.
Well, Say one.
I like how Clinton simplifies this. He goes, I'm going to make it easy on you. Name a movie.
Oh, yeah. I know. That's right.
You know, I can't even think of a movie quote at the moment because my brain is in finishing this podcast mode, but I'll come up with something.
I got one. I'm Batman.
Alrighty.
Can you guess what movie that's from?
The Lego Movie.
Steel Magnolias. It's from Batman. You're wrong.
Steel Magnolias. It's from SpongeBob, the movie.
That's right.
Okay. We're going to take you out of here then because we've got to record our Patreon show and get that out to our wonderful people who saved our Mac Mini from the scrap heap.
Yeah.
That means that song. Yes, that song. And if you want to get in touch with us, you can contact us at 707-530-2428. Wish us a Merry Christmas. Wish us a happy birthday. Whatever. Craig's birthday is coming up in January. He's going to be like 500 now.
No, I'm scraping off that third zero.
He remembers the last time Jupiter and Saturn came around.
I was there. I witnessed it.
In the year 1200 and something. Yes, that was a lot of fun. 707-530-CHAT is the number you want to call, or you can email us like Stephen Weshey did, technorama@chuckchat.com. We'd love to hear from you. We really, really would. And maybe we'll send you an e-Christmas card back if that works out for you. Until next time, tell a friend about Technorama, and Craig, give me a binary high five.
All right, 101.
Thanks, everybody. Stay safe.
Yes, thanks for listening.